Welcome to Dance Matters Podcast, a place to be inspired, motivated, and educated.
A place where we invite performers to share their stories so we can celebrate all things dance and the performing arts.
We're your hosts, Kaylee
and Charlie.
Dance Matters Podcast is proudly brought to you by Crystallized Costumes,
the place for all your costume needs,
and adrenaline dance competitions. Today's guest, Zoe Iwanu, grew up immersed in the world of dance.
It seems that dance was in her blood, with her nan, aunt and mum all working as professional ballerinas.
Originally, Zoe's goal was to follow in their footsteps, but at the age of 12, she discovered her vocal talent.
From that day on, her trajectory changed. Zoe found a passion for musical theatre and jazz.
She appeared in her first amateur theatre role at the age of 11, when she was cast in Les Mis. Zoe then landed her first professional job working on the set of Dance Academy, which was followed up with her first professional stage role in Annie at the age of 12.
After graduating from school, Zoe went on to attend NIDA to achieve her Diploma of Musical Theatre. Following that, she successfully landed a role in Opera Australia's West Side Story.
Zoe then entered some difficult years, landing many dream roles in shows which were then cancelled due to COVID. But thankfully, since the world of theatre has been resurrected post-COVID, Zoe has gone on to land roles in Nine and Hairspray.
Now that performances are back in full swing, we can't wait to see what life has in store for her.
But before we discuss all the highs and lows, let's first take it back to a little Zoe following in her family's footsteps and into her mother's dance studio.
Well, I remember being in dance class as long as I can remember. My mum owned a dance studio, a ballet school, and I grew up surrounded by dancers. My nan and my auntie and my mum were all professional ballerinas, so I've always been surrounded by music.
So did they first put you into ballet?
Yeah, I was first put into dance class at my mum's studio, and I was there after school every day of the week, basically, from as long as I can remember. And then I just started wanting to do more classes, and it kind of just grew the love from there.
Did you ever have the goal to follow in your mother's footsteps and become a ballerina, or did you enjoy other sides of dance originally?
Yeah, very early days, I loved my ballet. I got to a stage probably around 12, 13 when I started high school, end of primary school, where I loved the jazz and the musical theatre more. And that's when I first discovered my voice. I did a bit of piano, and so I was musical in that sense growing up because my grandpa was a composer and a conductor. So I was surrounded by ballet and piano and music. And then I kind of found my own voice when I was about 12. And from there, when I loved the singing aspect, I also began to love more of the jazz and the musical theatre side of dancing. And that's kind of where my background in musical theatre formed.
So what was your training like growing up? You said you were dancing most days at the studios. How many hours were you doing? Were you doing troupes and solos, all of that?
Yeah, so I did a lot of group classes. I was there probably Monday through to Saturday, either 1 hour or 3 to 4 hours. I kind of did more and more. Even though my mum owned the dance school, it was completely my choice what classes I wanted to do. So growing up, I would be like, oh, I want to do this class. And then 1 year I wouldn't do that, and I'd do another one. And I got to go in with all the seniors and like go to the back of their class and join in their hip hop. And so I kind of just made up my own schedule. It was really great. My mum was so chill in that sense. It was like, you just do whatever you want to do and I'll support that. So my Mondays were more of the drama because we had the drama at the dance school and that was really fun. So Mondays were kind of recreational and drama. And then from there, the Tuesdays and Wednesdays from memory were like more exam classes, like the ballet and the tap. And then the later in the week was like all the troupes and the jazz competition classes. And yeah, so it just kind of got more exciting and bigger classes as the week went on.
You've obviously developed a love for musical theatre. What was it that first drew you to that genre?
Again, as long as I can remember, I remember being in the car and my dad, he's not musical at all, but he loves opera and musical theatre. And I just remember listening to Les Miserables and Jesus Christ Superstar and Phantom of the Opera in the car going to school. And so I was kind of surrounded by it. But I didn't know that I wanted to be a part of it until my singing teacher at the time, when I was about 12, when I first started singing lessons properly, said, hey, there's this amateur production of Les Miserables. I think you'd be a great cosette. I had no idea what the show was. I auditioned and I got the role, and it was in the Shire, Southern Shire, and I went to my first rehearsal and I knew nothing about musicals, and that moment really shaped my education surrounded by all of these amazing adult performers. And it was a local production. It wasn't professional, but my love grew from there. And that was when, a couple of years later, Annie the Musical was auditioning in Sydney. And I kind of knew a bit about musicals after doing a couple of local productions, but never on a professional scale. I was about 13 to 14 at that stage, and it was just another world. I remember going into this huge dance hall with all of these kids around me from as little as like 6 and 7 to 14. And because I was a little bit older, I had more of an understanding. And from there, when I was fortunate to get that show, that was where I was like, no, I want to do this for the rest of my life.
How old were you when you played Cosette?
I was, I think 11/12. I was very young, yeah.
And what do you think about amateur musicals? Would you encourage students who are wanting to get into musicals, who are wanting to pursue that, to look into that?
Absolutely. I think it depends on the show, and if it's right for you, and depending on the Musical Theatre Society. I know that they run in very different ways. They're also a big commitment. So it was always a struggle between, okay, do I do my classes, or do I do this for fun and have that performance experience? My biggest advice is, whether it's in an amateur production or in competitions or in examinations, always, always strive to have that performance experience, because that really, really shaped me. Whether it was the amateur productions or it was my exams or comps, having that experience really developed my comfortability in performing in front of audiences. So I would definitely do it for that reason only. And also to be around more musical theatre lovers and to see how a musical is shaped and rehearsed, I think is really educational. But it is a balance between doing that as well as your classes.
What would you say was your first breakthrough performance as a working professional?
My first breakthrough performance, I would say it would have been Dance Academy. I believe that was it was a couple of years before Annie, and that was a very different world to Annie, because that was a TV series. So the medium of screen is very different to musical theatre and live performance. But that was, I guess, my breakthrough professional performance as a child, but an older child. I dabbled into TV commercials and also some other guest appearances on TV shows when I was younger, but I couldn't really classify those as breakthroughs because I was too young and I just don't remember them. That was when I was that little bit older, when I knew and I understood that this was work and that I'm working.
And how old were you when you were on Dance Academy?
I believe I was 11 to 12.
And what was that experience like?
It was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. Honestly, I was surrounded by, Dina Kaplan, who was my older sister on the show, just took me in and made me feel so comfortable, because they'd all been filming for months before I joined in, because my episodes were later on in the series. And Alicia Bennett, Tom Green, all these amazing performers that I got to work with every day for a couple of months. And it was a very different world. I was also juggling school life with TV sets and getting up at 5 a.m., being on set at 6 a.m. and starting shooting at 7 a.m. And I was the only child as well on set at that time. So I was around all of these adults, and this was their day to day. And it was just this juxtaposition between school and primary school and working as a paid working actor. It was amazing. I felt like Hannah Montana. I had these two worlds, and no one at school really knew about it. I didn't go to a performing arts school, so they were very supportive, but no one knew about it. And so I kind of had this split personality and caught between these two worlds. It was amazing.
You attended NIDA. What course did you study, and why did you decide NIDA? Why not a full-time dance studio?
Yeah, so I did the musical theatre diploma at NIDA, and it was very new. It was only the second year that it had been running. The reason why I chose NIDA was because that's in school, and you never know what you really want to do growing up. And I always tell my students as well, you don't need to know. You just need to follow what you love. Because I loved singing, dancing, and acting, a musical theatre course seemed the most appropriate for me. I looked at a lot of more straight acting courses that did a little bit of singing and dancing, and then more dancing courses that had a little bit of singing and acting. And I was gravitated towards NIDA because it had the even three, and I thought, okay, well, I love them all. I don't really know what I want to do with my skill set, but at least I have an even amount of training for all three. And so that's when NIDA just kind of ticked all those boxes for me.
And how long did you study there for?
I studied there for a year.
Mm-hmm. And you come away with a diploma in musical theatre?
Diploma in musical theatre, yes. So qualifications in singing, acting and dancing, musical theatre.
You have performed in a range of television ads from Uncle Toby's to McDonald's and Target. When did you start that?
I started those when I was, I think, in year four. So dare I say maybe I was 9 or 10.
You've worked with Opera Australia. Did you enjoy that experience?
I loved working at Opera Australia. They are such a supportive company. And I guess doing the show West Side Story was one of the bucket list items for me because I grew up listening to that on the radio in my dad's car. It was such an amazing experience, and Opera Australia were very supportive during that.
You have worked in a range of musical theatre productions, including Annie, West Side Story, The Wizard of Oz, and most recently Hairspray. What do you enjoy about being involved in musical theatre?
I think the biggest joy for me is every musical that I do is a completely different experience from the other. So going from a musical such as West Side Story to then Hairspray, they're very different stylistically speaking, and also vocally and physically to dance. And I guess the joy is I have about 10 months to a year of working on one show that is purely this one style. It might be classical, and then the next year I can do something jazz and I can do something contemporary. And that's exciting. And also, it doesn't matter what musical you do, every night, every performance is different from the other. And you're giving that audience a purely unique experience that the audience the day before didn't experience and the audience after won't experience.
And what are the most challenging things about being involved in musical theatre productions?
Doing 8 shows a week. It's very physically taxing, yet rewarding. To be able to say that, you know, you get through a contract and you can consistently do the same show and the same physical exertion 8 times that week is pretty remarkable. And at current, I've seen, especially post-COVID, the schedules are still 8 shows a week, but you get 2 days off, being a Monday and Tuesday. That being said, you have 3 days of the week where you have double shows. So you're doing 2.5 hours of hard cardio twice that day. And it's exhausting. It's really physically taxing, but that's the most rewarding aspect. I mean, we don't just dance. Obviously, we love it, but it's because it's a challenge and because we get off that stage, we're huffed, we're puffed, we're sweating, we're crying, we're exhausted because it's such an exhilarating feeling to release all of those endorphins. And you get to do that 8 times a week. How cool is that?
Does it ever get repetitive, or do you feel like you can bring something different to each show?
I guess in a commercial show, like the big ones like Hairspray and West Side and Wizard of Oz, because you're being paid to do a job, and that job is to do that same show consistently, then you battle between, okay, being the performer and actor that you are, after 6 months, I want to keep it fresh. Can I still stay in the world of this show respectfully and do my job, but also make it interesting slightly? Mm-hmm. And is that maybe my mindset? Okay, my intention on this line or during this dance is to be excited or be bubbly. And you do certain things as an actor and as a performer to keep it interesting, yet stay consistent in that world.
You obviously have a talent for singing. When did you first realize you could sing?
To be honest, I just loved singing. I was such a foghorn when I was growing up. I was so loud, and I'd make these sounds. I loved Barbra Streisand. It was hilarious. My mum's got these videos of me singing around the house, Don't Rain on My Parade. And it was because of that when she was like, oh, I think I need to put her into singing lessons. Because all of my beautiful family were ballet dancers, no one knew about singing and musical theatre. And we kind of just got recommendations from some people around the area in the Sutherland Shire, and I started singing when I was about 11/12, or maybe 10 to 12. And I didn't really understand it. I knew that, okay, if I like this, then I have to obviously do lessons to make sure that I'm doing it correctly. I was very mature as a child. I knew, okay, I know from dancing. Yes, I love dancing, but I need to do classes to make it better. I knew that as a kid as well. I said, okay, I make these sounds. I don't know how I'm making these sounds. I want to know how I'm making these sounds. And through singing teaching, same similarly to dance training, I just started singing lessons once a week and it just formed from there.
Can everyone become a better singer with training?
Absolutely. Singing is just a muscle. And if we can all talk, we can all sing. That is my gospel. I truly believe anyone can dance. Anyone can learn how to dance. We all have natural abilities, whether we know it or not. Similar with dancing. So someone can be naturally more flexible than another. Someone might have more muscle definition and strength than another. But we can all train the areas that we're weak at to make them stronger. Some people have to work harder than others. But as long as we're all putting the work in, we can most definitely develop that skill. We're working with muscles as a vocalist, and we think that it's very different to dancing, but really it's just a more concentrated version. We've got muscles in our throat as well as we've got muscles in our arms and our legs that we use to dance.
You do some singing teaching now, don't you?
I do, yes.
And do you enjoy that?
I love it. I really find it so rewarding. I think because I grew up surrounded by my mum, and she's one of the best teachers that I know. She's so giving, and the children have so much respect for her, whether they are 3-year-olds or 18-year-olds. She has this certain assertiveness, but also respect, and everyone just values her opinion. And I think because I was surrounded by her energy growing up and just watching her as a child, sitting in the corner of her class, playing with my, you know, doing my homework, I had that in my subconscious. And I guess I naturally got into teaching at a dance school growing up and doing some student teaching. And it's just so rewarding, similar to doing a show and looking into the audience when you're bowing and seeing all of these children and adults smiling, being like, oh, I made them feel happy. I made them feel something. And I can do the same thing when I'm teaching. If I get someone to achieve something or to make them feel a bit more confident singing or dancing, and just to see their face light up, oh my goodness, I can do that. It's the most rewarding thing as a teacher.
What would be your advice for people wanting to become involved in the musical theatre world?
I would say training, 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 and also training what you're most weakest at. So if you're a dancer and you haven't sung before, or you think you're a bad singer, I say that in quotation marks because no one's bad. If you think that you need to become more confident in your singing, then work on it. If you need to, if you feel like you get a bit shy performing, then do some drama classes. They're all interwoven into one in musical theatre. But even if you just want to get into straight dancing, drama is such an important aspect for a dancer, I think personally. I don't care how many turns you can do or how technical you are. If you don't make me feel something, if you're not feeling something, which is the acting aspect and the performance quality as a dancer, then I just don't want to watch. I don't feel affected. So I think every dancer, even if they don't want to get into musical theatre, should do drama classes to feel vulnerable, to make them open up their heart and their insides, to pour something out, to show that audience. I think they're all interwoven, and to definitely work on what you feel you're most weakest at, and to consistently train as well.
I might challenge you there. I don't think you've heard Charlie sing yet. You might find a bad singer here.
Everyone can work on it. I promise you. I worked with a lot of children from the dance school, and you know, one of my kids hadn't sung before. I worked with them for a few months, and they got into Billy Elliot the musical. And you know, she was so shy her first lesson starting singing, and we worked on it. And it's always the way that you approach things as a teacher. Positive reinforcement and always saying yes and, or why don't we shape it this way, rather than saying no, that was wrong. It's all about the mindset. And again, it's about, okay, especially with children, how do I make them feel comfortable? Because again, if we don't feel comfortable, our muscles are going to tighten up and we're obviously not going to want to sing. But if we're like, say, singing in the bathroom, like no one's listening, singing in the shower, we always sound our best because our muscles are relaxed. So as a teacher, someone that doesn't feel comfortable singing, you just want to make them feel comfortable, and then their muscles will relax, and then they'll develop that sound.
Do you have an agent?
I do, yes.
And do you think that's important for people wanting to work in the industry?
I think so. My agency, Molson Kidney Management, is so supportive, and I've been with them for a few years now. I was originally with more a child's agency growing up, and they are around, and the main people on their books are children. And so they get all of the briefs for children-based musicals or TV things, commercials. And then when I became an adult, I thought, okay, I need to maybe get a bigger agency that can kind of do both TV and theatre, because I'm kind of split between those two worlds. So I think that an agent is really important because they have the communications and connections with casting directors and with shows and productions and producers to get the briefs for auditions coming out. And you as the performer might not have that insight. So they just act as a guide and they help support you in that audition process. And if you were to land a gig, they also act as your support mechanism as well.
How do you go about finding an agent as a person wanting to work in the industry? How do you find one that's going to do the right thing by you?
Absolutely. It's really hard because every agent provides something new compared to the other. And I see an agent very much as a relationship, because you're working so closely with them. You need to make sure that you get along with them. You know, I find a lot of, say, female identifying actors prefer female agents. They don't need to, but if you feel like you have more of that kind of bond and relationship with that person, then that's what you need to strive for. It's really hard because you can go on to Google and type in best agents in Sydney, but you can't trust Google. I always went off, especially growing up, word of mouth and saying, okay, I know this person from that dance school that they've done a TV commercial. I wonder who their agent is. And then it's as easy as picking up the phone, having a conversation with them. You get a good vibe and you're like, oh yeah, they seem like a really nice person. I feel like I'm going to really work with them really well. Then trust your gut as well, because remember that they work with you and you need to make sure that you can work with them as well. So pick up the phone, call as many people, get in contact with as many people, agents speaking, and just have a conversation with them and you will know who the right one is. Also look at who's on their books and see, okay, this person's done this, this and this. This person's done this, this and this. Okay, they seem more like TV agents. Maybe that's not what I want. Maybe I want more so a theatre agent. And so you go onto their books and see who are their current clients and say, okay, I'm similar to that person. Maybe this is the right agent for me.
Now, Zoe, you are still very young and you have so much ahead of you, but what have been your career highlights so far?
I think working at the Sydney Opera House has to be one of the best experiences and coolest experiences of my life, because you grow up studying this amazing icon in Sydney / Australia. And I had all of these wow moments walking into work, into stage door. I was doing West Side Story at the time and doing one of the most iconic pieces of theatre in one of the most iconic buildings in the world. I was like, oh yeah, this is pretty cool.
Now, you've been in the industry since you were a child. What have been the biggest challenges that you have faced?
I think as a child, balancing work and school, as well as being a paid working actor. And I learned quick smart, okay, this is enjoyable and I enjoy it, but it's a job. And I had that sense of maturity because I was surrounded by adults, and a lot of my early childhood experiences in TV and theatre, I wasn't surrounded by children. And so I had a very grounded adult mature energy around me. And so matching that, because I'm like, okay, well, I mean, I'm getting paid to do a job just like these people, so I've got to deliver that. And I've got to learn my words off by heart. I've got to prepare. If I have to learn a piece of chore, I need to know that. And it's all in the preparation prior to the day of filming or to the performance. I think growing up and being an adult, that sense of consistency and inconsistency is very challenging, because we are very, very fortunate. And when you have something, if you have a show for 10 months, it's the most incredible, fulfilling experience. But you know that after that 10 months is over, you have to say goodbye to that wonderful company of people, and you might not ever work with some of your best mates again. And especially during COVID, no musicals were happening, and I had 7 COVID closures, 7 shows. And, you know, you get so attached to a show that you're just about to put on, and then it just gets shut down because of a pandemic. And what can you do? You can't find that consistency as a working actor. So I think challenges, finding aspects, whether they're a part of your skill set, singing, dancing, acting, or they're something completely different, finding a hobby and a job that you can kind of go back to that you're still fulfilled doing. So for instance, teaching, for me, I still feel extremely fulfilled. I'm still working in the arts, and I'm also being able to share my knowledge with the younger generation and develop the next generation of performers. That's an incredibly fulfilling thing for me.
If you could tell your 10-year-old self any piece of advice, what would it be?
I would say, don't worry about what other people think, because most likely they're just worrying about themselves. And we get so self-conscious thinking, oh, am I doing the right thing? But if we are just doing our job simply, if we've done the preparation and the hard work and the training, and we just simply show up on the day and we do the performance for yourself and for the audience, that's all you need to do. We kind of overcomplicate things. And I think as a child, obviously working around professional performers that have been doing it for 10, 20 years, you're like, oh, I haven't done this before. And simply, if you just do the work beforehand, you don't need to worry. You've done the work. Now you just need to enjoy it and do the performance.
What are your goals and dreams for the future?
My goals and dreams for the future, I just want to keep telling stories I feel passionate about, and having that consistency and just striving for stories and for jobs that I feel I will love doing 8 shows a week, as well as with my teaching. I want to teach those that are passionate and those that want to learn, and whether it doesn't matter how skillful they are or how experienced they are, I want to help develop that next generation. So I think to consistently work in the arts and doing things that I love, to simply put it, are my dreams and goals.
Where can people follow your story or get in contact with you?
Yeah, so I have Instagram page, Zoe Iwanu, and a lot of people these days, I guess I'm in that generational shift where it went from Google searches to then social media. So a lot of people connect to me through social media these days. It's so easy just to send a message and say, hey, I'm interested in this, or I think you'd be great for this gig, or my daughter's wanting singing lessons. And it's just so easy. Social media and having that ability to connect to people. I've had people across from the other side of the world regarding gigs contact me through social media. So, yeah, I have my Facebook page and my Instagram, and I kind of just go from there. I've also got a website, Zoe Iwanu, and that's got all my contact details as well.
Well, Zoe, thank you for giving up all of your time and chatting with us today.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me. All the best as well with your podcast, and I can't wait to follow and keep up to date with you guys too.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Dance Matters Podcast.
If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with a friend or on your socials.
It would be greatly appreciated if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review and rating. That helps the show reach more people so that we can keep bringing episodes to you.
Make sure you check out Crystallized Costumes
whenever you need your next costume.
And Adrenaline Dance Competitions
for well-run dance comps. And if you haven't caught up with all of our other episodes yet, head on back and check them out. There are some incredible stories waiting to be heard.
Remember, listen, love, and learn.
Bye.